in, and I could hear faint, tinny music echoing from the bowls of her ears. She was wearing only a sports bra for a top. A dusting of acne colored the skin around her collarbones. Dr. Navidson said, "Hello, Marjorie. Nice to finally meet you." Marjorie didn't acknowledge him. Dad said,
Wait a minute, Barry. Shouldn't we get a shirt on her?"
Barry had hovered out of camera range to the back of the room near her closet. He shook his head no and made a camera rolling motion with his hand. Dad threw up his arms.
"I'd like to put a shirt on her. She's only 14.
Mom said, "Marjorie, do you want to put a shirt on? Are you comfortable being filmed this way?" Marjorie shrugged and looked bored, as though she were being asked to do some extra homework. "I'm okay, you okay." Her speech was slow. Some of the letters were heavier than others. Dad said,
"Can you take your earphones out at least?"
"I'd rather leave them in. I feel better that way, you know?"
"We just want to talk for a minute and..."
"Dad, I can hear you fine. I can hear everything fine." Marjorie grunted the words not like a demon, but like only surly teens can. Dad uncrossed his arms and took a quick half-step toward Marjorie's dresser, then stopped. What he wanted to do was stomp over to her dresser, start ripping open random drawers until he found a T-shirt, throw it at her, yell at her to put it on, and then rip the earphones off her head and chuck them across the room. But he couldn't because of the cameras and his beloved priestly mentor. That's a lot to read in uncrossed arms and a twitch toward the bureau, I know. Likely it's hindsight, and all that happened after that has entwined with and mutated my memories of that night in Marjorie's room. But it doesn't mean my read of Dad isn't an accurate one. As Mom withdrew and detached, Dad became both more pious and blindingly angry, and on that night I remember the fury emanating from him in waves, like heat from a space heater. Marjorie knew it too, and she smirked and rolled her eyes at him to make it all worse. Marjorie finally saw me latched onto Mom's side, and she perked up.
"Oh, hi there, Miss Mary."
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to answer her, if I was even supposed to talk at all. During the post-big meeting proposal, the adults hadn't told me anything other than that I was going to be in the room with them. I was mad that they hadn't given me more specific directions. It made me think they didn't really know what they were doing. I'd been quiet for a long time, so I hurried out a quick, "Hi?" like it was a question. Marjorie tied her hair back and then adjusted the straps of her sports bra. She said, "Don't talk to me, Mary. It's not safe. Didn't Father Wanderley tell you that you shouldn't be talking to me?" I caught Father Wanderley throw a quick look to Barry in the back of the room. Then he looked at me and nodded.
"It's okay, Mary. You may answer her if you wish."
I said,
"No, he didn't tell me that."
"Oh, man. Mom and Dad, you need to get a better priest." Dr. Navidson opened his laptop and pecked at the keyboard with exaggerated finger strokes, like he was trying to poke a hole in the machine. He said,
"Why is that, Marjorie?"
"Idle and curious chatter with a demon should be avoided at all cost. It's exorcism 101. I'm surprised you assholes don't know that. No, wait. I'm not surprised." Dad sucked a breath in through his teeth. Mom squeezed my shoulders. They'd heard her swear plenty of times, especially during the last few months, but in this setting and in this company, they reacted as though she'd just punched each of them in the gut. Father Wanderley said,
"Are we speaking with a demon right now?"
"Yeah, sure, why not?"
Marjorie smiled and winked at me, which seemed like proof that she was faking, or proof that she really did have a demon inside her. Marjorie said,
"Hey, Mom and Dad."
And then she paused to blow them a kiss.
"Dr. Navidson and everyone watching at home, did you know that Father Wanderley is breaking, like, one of the most important official rules according to the church?"
Father Wanderley had his legs crossed and his hands folded on top of his leather-bound book. He said,
"And what rule is that?"
"No media, right? You're not supposed to make a spectacle of the sacramental rite of exorcism." "Duh. I'll directly quote the Vatican for you." Marjorie cleared her throat and then spoke in a voice that sounded decidedly, if not comically, male.
"The presence of media representatives during an exorcism is not allowed."
Mom said,
"Is that true?"
Father Wanderley said,
"It is. However..."
Marjorie interrupted. "No, no, no, let me." She changed her voice again, sounding airy, breezy, words stopping and breaking in an off-putting rhythm, and sounding very much like Father Wanderley.
"However, Pope Francis just performed an exorcism in public, right? In front of cameras and everything. You can even watch it on YouTube. It's on there like 4 different times, and one of them has over 200,000 views. That new pope, he's such a rebel."
Marjorie stopped and coughed. It seemed exaggerated. "It hurts to talk like you, Father, so I'm stopping. But lucky for you, I guess, that the no media rule has already been bent. So why not use me to shoot what's going to be like a recruitment video, right? Some Norwegian dude tried it once already with a documentary featuring a Vatican-approved exorcist. But seriously, who watches Norwegian documentaries, right? Father Wanderley's TV show will be a much bigger hit. It already is. The pilot episode was the Discovery Channel's highest-rated debut ever. So I'm told. Already, after 2 episodes, everyone involved, everyone in this room, is making fistfuls of money, right? And just imagine all those God-fearing sheep and training out there watching our show, itching to come back to the church, soon to be saying their hallelujahs and filling donation baskets. Mom had moved away from me toward Dad while Marjorie spoke. She put an arm around his midsection. Dad kept his arms crossed, and when Marjorie finally finished talking, he started stammering,
"Marjorie, what are you... I don't... How does she know all this?"
Father Wanderley said,
"Do not be fooled by the lies."
"Lies? What lies? Nielsen ratings don't lie. I can show you the Norwegian documentary. And it would take me 2 seconds to pull up the clip of Pope Francis and the cute little possessed guy in the wheelchair. Did you know that the chief Vatican exorcist said the reason the guy in the wheelchair was possessed was because of Mexico's abortion laws? Makes sense to me. And now the Archdiocese in Madrid wants to hire 8 more exorcists. Maybe we can make them bump it up to an even 10 after our show, yeah?" Dr. Navidson was a marble statue lit by the glow of his computer screen. He wasn't typing anymore, and he sat with one hand partially obscuring his face and chin. He asked,
"Can you show us on your laptop where you've been getting this information, Marjorie?"
"Laptop? No laptop necessary. It's all common knowledge. Everybody's talking about it, all my friends at school. You know, that's what we talk about when we're not talking about boys and their penises. No, wait, that's not true. I get this all from the voices in my head, yeah. They're not my friends, but they tell me everything. It's cool, but I have to shut them up sometimes, just to get some rest."
Marjorie pointed at her earbuds.
"Or maybe the voices are useless and just suck, and don't really tell me anything but gibberish. Stuff that almost sounds like words, so I listen. And I think that if I just listen closely enough, I'll finally understand what they're saying, and then they'll stop, and then boom. It's like 5 hours later, and I'm still listening so hard I want to cry, and I've bitten off all my fingernails until my fingers are ragged, raw, bloody, worn-down red crayons. And the voices are still there. And I'm ready to stab out my eardrums and then stab everyone else. No, wait. I haven't stabbed anyone yet. So maybe it's all Mary's fault. Yeah. Mary told me and tells me everything about everyone. She's so sneaky. She can't be trusted."
"No, I didn't. Mom, I didn't."
"Okay, okay, it wasn't Mary.
I was born with all of the universe's information hid in the infinite folds and wrinkles of my gray matter, and the information itself decides when it wants to come out and be known. Isn't that kind of creepy? All that information just there already? How'd it get there in the first place, right? Like, I didn't know it until you came in here, but now that I see you and it and everyone else, I suddenly know that the red book in your lap has a Latin title and is called De Exorcismis et Supplicationibus Quibusdam. It's a liturgical book, whatever that means, revised and published by the Vatican in 1999. Or maybe, maybe. Maybe I'm just a lost, confused kid, scared of what's happening to me, to my family, to the world. And I hate school, and I have no friends, and I spend my days sleeping with my iPod cranked up as loud as it'll go, trying not to go completely crazy. And with all that time alone, I'm looking shit up on the internet, looking up the same stuff over and over, and I memorize it all because I'm wicked smart. Because I have to fill my head with something other than the ghosts. Father Wanderley said,
I suggest that you no longer allow her access to the laptop until after the rite has been performed successfully.
Mom said, What? No, we can't. She's trying to keep up with some of her schoolwork online. She needs it. Mom sounded as slurry and sleepy as Marjorie had when we first came into the room. Marjorie said, Dr. Navidson, I'd be really sad and unhealthy without any connection to the outside world, don't you think? Dr. Navidson looked at my father and said,
If you haven't been doing so already, her online activities should be monitored.
You guys are no fun. You can look at my browser history. I haven't scrubbed it. No bad stuff. And sure, I downloaded the Tor browser, but I haven't used it, not really. Father Wanderley, I'm sure you've heard of or used Tor.
Oh, I don't think so. I am not very computer savvy.
Marjorie looked down into her lap and started talking fast, so fast that I had a hard time keeping up. Oh, well, Tor allows you to surf anonymously and go onto sites on the dark net, which is a fun name for groups of secret sites you can't get to on regular browsers. Journalists and dissidents and hackers use Tor to keep out of the government eye and avoid censorship. Criminals use it too, weapons, drugs, and Father Wanderley's favorite, kiddie porn. It's a diddler's haven. Marjorie giggled and pulled her bedspread up to her neck. Dad swore under his breath. Father Wanderley was turned away from me so I couldn't see his face. Mom crouched down in front of me so that we were face to face, nose to nose.
Mary, maybe we should go. Do you want to go?
I'm sure as an 8-year-old I'd heard the word porn and knew it was something bad, or if not bad per se, then something not for kids, but didn't really know what it meant. I certainly hadn't seen any yet, so I wasn't sure what Marjorie was talking about. But I remember the room feeling like it had just gotten more dangerous. I wanted to stay, but didn't say anything to Mom. Marjorie held out her stop hands and said in her regular voice, Stay, Mom and Mary, stay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was an easy, cheap shot. We'll be good from now on. Mostly.
Father Wanderley said, We?
Loudly, like he was a courtroom lawyer who had finally broken his witness. He looked over at Dr. Navidson, who just nodded and resumed typing on his laptop. Slip of the tongue. Marjorie was twitching now. Her shoulders jerked up and down, legs spasmed beneath the covers.
What is your name?
Marjorie laughed for a long time.
I'm sorry, you're being serious. Okay, Marjorie, or Yithora. It's an old, old, old family name. No one uses it anymore.
She laughed some more. I'd never seen her so manic, so clearly performing, and performing in a way that gained momentum, like an avalanche. It was terrifying. Father Wanderley asked,
Is your name funny?
Maybe. Anyone heard of me? I'm pretty sure Ken has.
Ken wasn't there. I wanted to go get him.
I felt a weird pang of jealousy that his name would be brought up by Marjorie. Father Wanderley said, "We'll be sure to ask Ken."
"We,"
Marjorie stressed the word, wringing it out like a wet bathing suit,
"consulted and have a few questions for you guys. Why is Mary here anyway?"
Dad said,
"Because she loves you and wants to help."
"That's sweet. How exactly is she going to help us?"
She slipped into a guttural voice, both high-pitched and sonorous, with a lilt of a British accent. It was the voice of Gollum. I thought for sure she'd gone too far, that Mom or Dad would call her on impersonating her favorite character from her favorite series of movies and accuse her of faking everything. But when no one answered right away, she said in her normal voice,
"Okay, so Mary's here to be part of the show. The more the merrier."
"Got it."
Father Wanderley said, "Dr. Navidson, have you seen enough?"
"Wait, don't rush us. Dr. Navidson, are you a Freudian?"
He ignored her question and closed his laptop.
"We have another question for you, Father. Help us with this one. How come the church recommends that witnesses should be present, like now and during the exorcism, especially if the possessed is a young woman? It actually says that in the Catholic Encyclopedia. This is specially enjoined as a measure of precaution in case the subject is a woman."
Father Wanderley said,
"I think it's clear we've interacted far too much with the demon spirit already. John, I think you should stay here with me and help try to settle Marjorie down for the evening. Everyone else should go downstairs."
"He's not answering our questions about the witness." "Hey, does anyone else think that's kind of icky? Who is it that needs the protection of witnesses in that scenario?"
Marjorie thumped her puffed-out chest and spoke in a man's voice.
"The righteous, courageous, humble, holy man who might be tempted by the unclean perversions of a demon-infested slut."
Marjorie then poked fingers into her cheeks, making dimples, and she spoke in a baby doll voice.
"Or the poor, vulnerable, hapless, helpless woman. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but Dr. Navidson, help us out here, even if you're not a Freudian."
Both men stood. Father Wanderley made a please leave the room gesture at us with his hands. Dr. Navidson walked slowly toward the door. Dad, Mom, and I stayed rooted to our spots. Marjorie tried one more time, this time in a pleading, near-tears voice that wasn't baby doll, but sounded a lot younger than Marjorie normally sounded.
"Father Wanderley, don't leave. I'm sorry. Help me."
"I'm not leaving. I will help you, Marjorie. That is a promise."
"Have you ever performed an exorcism before?"
"No. But I have been present at many. I've witnessed true horror and true salvation."
Marjorie scrambled from her sitting position onto all fours and reached out to Father Wanderley.
"Tell me, have you seen a demon before? What did it look like? Could you see it inside the other person, pressing out on the skin from inside their body? Did you see the outline of a claw, a wing, a face of a monster in skin? Or can a demon be someone who looks just like me? So it looks like a person stuck inside another person. Does the demon inside leave any marks? Are the possessed marked so you can tell who's possessed and who isn't? Do the marks look like this?"
Marjorie sat on her knees and raised her arms so that we could see her midriff. Mom and Dad gasped. I covered my mouth. Red slashes and gouges colored her skin. They crossed and looped and overlapped, like someone was trying to scribble her out, as though she were a mistake. Marjorie kept talking while the adults scrambled and shouted orders at one another. Someone turned on the overhead light, and someone else ran to the bathroom to get a wet washcloth and bandages. I stood there and listened to Marjorie.
"Father Wanderley, have you seen a demon or evil spirit actually leave the body? What did it look like? Could you see anything? Did you see a wisp, like smoke, over a campfire? Does the demon get sucked into a void, clutching onto the old, possessed body like a life raft? Or does it go quietly, like a child leaving her parents' home for the final time?
What if you didn't see anything? If you couldn't see anything, if the spirit was invisible, then how could you know if the exorcism really, truly worked?
Mom and Dad gave her a glass of water and asked that she swallow some pills. They said it would help her sleep. Mom mentioned Dr. Hamilton and the phrase, "Your doctor," to Marjorie repeatedly. They gently attended to her injuries. Marjorie let them guide her so that she was lying down and back under the covers. She was still talking, but she was almost done. You could tell.
After you performed the exorcism, how did you know that demon wasn't still in there, hiding? How do you know it didn't go into a hibernation state, quieting down to come out later, years and years later when no one would be around to help? Hey, how do you know if the wrong spirit left? What if you expelled the person's real spirit and only the demon spirit was there to take its place? If I believed in any of that stuff, I'd be afraid that was going to happen to me.
Her eyes closed. She rolled onto her side, away from the room and away from us. Her eyes were closed, and she whispered her final questions.
Father Wanderley, how do you know if a person has a spirit inside their body in the first place? Have you ever seen that, at least?
All was chaos when we left Marjorie's room. Dad shouted angrily at Jen, the camera woman, to stand in the hallway and keep an eye on Marjorie for a minute. Jen yelled down to Barry, he was already downstairs, that she wasn't taking orders from Dad. Mom yelled at Dad to shut up and quickly led me downstairs. When we got to the foyer, she had her cell phone out and she told Dad and Father Wanderley she was calling the hospital, calling Dr. Hamilton to tell him about the marks. Mom and Dad wrestled over the cell phone. He grabbed her arm and she repeatedly slapped his hand. Father Wanderley attempted unsuccessfully to mediate. Barry and Dr. Navidson then joined in, trying to calm everyone down. I yelled,
"Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!"
They did stop grabbing and talking and arguing momentarily, everyone looking embarrassed. Mom told me to go to the kitchen and she'd be right there. I nodded and backed away slowly, not toward the kitchen but into the living room, and as I did, I watched and listened for them to start talking again. Dad was first. He said he was sorry for grabbing Mom and he called her sweetie, but then he insisted that they couldn't call Dr. Hamilton about this because he'd put Marjorie away again in the hospital and then she couldn't be saved. He said they'd talked and prayed about this and had decided to believe in Father Wanderley and they had to see this through. Father Wanderley called Mom by her first name repeatedly and told her that he knew what was happening with Marjorie was a parent's worst nightmare, but the Dad was right about not calling. He told her that after what they'd just witnessed, he was sure that he would be able to get the bishop's permission and perform the exorcism soon. Mom shook her head the whole time and said, "This is a nightmare, and we'll never wake up from it." Ken was in the living room waiting for us. I said hi to him, and he said, "Hi," back sheepishly. Then he said, "Sorry." I wasn't sure why. I was going to ask him, but Barry left Mom and Dad and beelined it over to Ken. He asked Ken if he'd watched everything from the trailer. Ken had. Tony, the cameraman, Dad, and Dr. Navidson then swarmed Ken, who looked queasy, like he had my fake stomachache from earlier that morning. Father Wanderley was still in the front foyer with Mom. I couldn't hear them talking anymore. He shook both of her hands gently and left her in the foyer. As he passed, he touched my shoulder and thanked me for my help, that I did great, and that he might need my help again. Then he, too, scuttled off to join the group that had encircled Ken, and he also bombarded him with questions. Ken held up his hands for quiet. He told the group that he thought the demon name Euthora was familiar when he first heard it while watching from the trailer, but couldn't recall exactly who or what it was, so he had Googled it. Euthora was a minor demon in the fictional cosmic horror universe of the early 20th century writer H.P. Lovecraft, a universe that featured nameless elder gods and tentacled beasties from other dimensions. Ken stressed that Euthora was completely fictional and not found anywhere in Judeo-Christian or pagan lore. He did say it was interesting that in Lovecraft's stories, Ithora appeared in a seductive female form. Dr. Navidson said, Marjorie spoke in a male's voice when she was presumably under Ithora's sway. Father Wanderley said, The demon is hiding its true identity. It always does until the end.
Why did she say you would know? Have you been talking to her, telling her about this stuff?
Dad said. He wasn't quite yelling at Ken, but he was loud enough for Father Wanderley to say, Easy, John.
What? No, I haven't exchanged more than polite chit-chat or hellos and byes with Marjorie since the earliest interviews when we first showed up. And to be clear, I didn't know the demon by name. I had to look it up. I mean, yes, I am a big fan of Lovecraft the writer and all, but Ithora was such a minor character I didn't remember it.
So how did she know you were a fan?
Dad sounded like he was picking a fight. Father Wanderley said, I'm afraid we know the terrible answer to that. Ken shrugged and said,
Look, she probably saw me wearing my Lovecraft Miskatonic University t-shirt.
Dad said,
Not likely. What 14-year-old girl would pick up on that?
Lovecraft is a pretty famous writer. She could have made the connection on her own.
Or maybe she Googled my t-shirt, found Lovecraft and Ithora on Wikipedia. Not a huge leap there, I don't think.
Barry tapped Ken on the shoulder and shook his head. Ken nodded and stopped talking about Marjorie and Lovecraft and said,
I'm gonna go back to the trailer, okay, in case anyone needs me.
Father Wanderley, Dad, and Dr. Navidson tightened into their own circle, and they talked fast and over one another, so I couldn't really make out who said what. But they were all talking about how Marjorie was in fact possessed by a demon, with the proof being what she was and wasn't capable of doing.
14-year-old girl couldn't possibly know all she claimed to know.
To give details advanced seminary students wouldn't give,
the name of the book in correct Latin, to refer to Freud and this fictional demon from a long-dead author.
Even if she looked it all up on the computer,
no way she could have memorized it all. She did more than memorize, she synthesized.
Never mind anticipate that she'd need to say or use that information during our interview.
Right. A girl like her can't speak as eloquently as she did. No way. A girl wouldn't ask the questions she asked.
Mom yelled at them. Marjorie has always been an extremely intelligent young woman. Of course she can do all those things you're saying she can't do. Dad said,
Sarah, we're not saying she's not an intelligent girl. That's not the point. Now's not the time to...
Mom didn't wait for him to finish. She tugged roughly on my arm and said, Come on, in the kitchen, with me, now. I followed her into the kitchen. I thought Mom was crying, but she wasn't. She was seething with anger and muttering under her breath. She slammed cabinet doors and poured herself a big glass of wine and a cup of milk for me. I asked her to warm it up, and she put it in the microwave, slamming that door shut, too. We sat at the table with our drinks. I tested the milk with my lips, and it was the perfect temperature. I finally asked her,
Who are you mad at?
Everything. Everyone. Myself included.
I'm sorry.
I'm not mad at you, honey. You're the only person I'm not mad at.
Marjorie, too?
I'm not mad at her either. She's sick, and she needs help. And I don't think anyone in the other room is really going to help her, but it's my own damn fault that I can't stop it now. I should never have let it happen in the first place. I mean, can you believe this? Any of this? How did we get here? The cameras, writers, producers, protesters, priests. What a mess. I was just so scared that we were losing her, and I didn't know what to do anymore. And I wanted to believe. Wanted to believe all of it. I still do. Mom looked down and saw me staring at her. She said, Drink your milk. I wanted to tell her that it was going to be okay, that Marjorie had told me that she was faking, so when Father Wanderley performed his exorcism, she would fake that it worked, too. But I didn't. I can't really explain why. I remember so much of that fall in detail, and I'm in the unique position of having 6 televised episodes of my family to revisit when I do forget something. And sometimes I feel like I'm still the same 8-year-old little sister
who longs for Big Sis to tell her what to do and how to do it. I said to Mom, I believe you should too, like Dad.
Yeah, I think Father Wanderley can help. He can. He'll make her be normal again.
Mom crumbled into chest-heaving sobs. I didn't know what happened, so I kept saying, Mom, over and over again. And when I tried to ask her what was wrong and tried to hug her, she shook me away. She wouldn't let me pull her hands away from her face, and she told me to get out and go away. When I said,
Why, what did I do?
She told me to leave her alone and go see Daddy and the priest because they had all the answers and to leave her alone. And I still asked her,
Why?
Until she screamed, Get the fuck away from me! And threw her wine glass at the wall. Later that night, we enacted a new bedtime policy to help keep Marjorie from hurting herself any further and to give everyone peace of mind. That was the phrase Dad used, and I tried to make a joke out of it, pantomiming my presenting him with a literal chunk of my brain. It didn't go over well. The new policy. Marjorie was to sleep with her door open, and Dad was to be in his room with his door open. Mom was to sleep with me in my room. I could leave my door open or shut. It was up to me. Right before he left, I'd heard Dr. Navidson whisper to Dad about letting me choose whether or not to leave my door open, as it would empower me, give me a sense of control over the situation. Mom had finished a third glass of wine by the time I was sent to the bathroom to get ready for bed. When I got to my room, she was in my bed already, still in her clothes, but underneath the covers. Mom told me no stories. She said she was too tired and that I had to go straight to sleep. She didn't apologize for swearing at me and throwing the glass in the kitchen, either. I stood in my doorway, undecided on whether to leave the door open. I saw it as an important choice, one not to be taken lightly. I said more to myself than to Mom,
If I close the door, then we won't be able to hear anything, you know, in case we need to hear it. But if I leave it open, I think it'll be too bright in here for me to sleep and too noisy, too. But I kind of want to leave it open because everyone else has theirs open. But if I close it...
I opened and closed the door like I was working a bellows.
We might sleep later than everyone else by accident and I'll be late for school. And if I leave it open, I might not fall asleep and be too tired to go to school. If I close it...
Mary, enough. Shut the light off. Get in bed. Now. I left the door half open, which I figured was a good compromise. I took off my glasses, put them on the bureau all folded up, and I crawled over Mom and into bed. She was on the outside, and I was pinned between her and the bedroom wall. Her back was turned to me. I sloppy kissed her ear and said,
Good night, ear.
Mom didn't turn her head and just sent an empty air kiss back to me. I was wired, twitchy, leaking giggles and random noises. I tried breathing my end-of-the-day sigh, the one that signaled it was truly time for bed. It didn't work. I put my icy-cold feet on the back of Mom's bare calves as a joke. She barely flinched and told me from some faraway place to go to sleep. I lay there on my back with my hands folded across my chest, trying to remember and recount everything that had been said in Marjorie's room. I knew that the adults would pick through the video and be able to break down what she'd said and find the potential meanings and secrets. I knew that for them, words meant so many different things. I worried that they would figure out Marjorie didn't have a real demon inside her, that she was faking, and then they'd cancel the show and our family would be back in trouble with money again. But then I thought about her scratch marks and how scary she was, and I wondered if it was possible for her to be both possessed by a demon and be faking it, too. And then I worried about getting a demon stuck inside me, and I worried about it happening to my parents. What would we do then? I rolled the word demon around in my mouth, squeezing it with my tongue, tasting it, letting it flick off the back of my teeth, saying it in my head until the syllables didn't fit right and it sounded weird and indecipherable, just like the strange demon name Marjorie had given them. I woke up later that night, and Mom was snoring deeply. I didn't really have to go pee, but I went to the bathroom anyway. I left the bathroom door open, and my peeing was so loud I giggled with embarrassment, but I was also laughing at whoever would be stuck watching and listening to the tape from the hallway cameras. I crept out of the bathroom without washing my hands and stood in the hallway. It was chilly, even though steam whistled in our old radiators, and I could smell the heat, which I'd imagined was the smell of burning dust. Dad's door was still open. He slept pushed all the way to the side of the bed closest to the hallway. His mouth was open, and his lips drooped like one of those silly dogs with the saggy skin. Marjorie's door remained open as well. Getting up to pee when I didn't really need to was how an 8-year-old lied to herself. Of course, I only got up to use the bathroom, not to go see what Marjorie was doing. I watched my sleeping father as I slunk into her room. Without my glasses, everything was a little bit fuzzy. Like my father, Marjorie was lying on her side, facing the door, but she was wide awake.
"Did you hear me peeing?"
she whispered. "I've been watching Dad all night. I'm worried. I think he might be the one who's possessed. No lie. His face twitches like he's in pain. Hasn't he been acting so strange, so over-the-top religious now and always so angry? I'm scared. I think he thinks about doing bad things, really bad things, like in the Growing Things story I told you." I shrugged and thought about telling her that Mom had been angry too.
"I think he's okay.
He spent over an hour reading from the Bible. I think he was reading the same passage over and over because he wasn't turning any pages."
"Marjorie,
shh." I'd forgotten to whisper.
"Sorry. Are you still faking?"
"What do you think?"
"Yes?"
"Then I am. No worries, monkey."
"Why'd you say all those things? Why'd you scratch yourself like that?"
"I had to do it, to make them all believe."
"Mom doesn't."
"She just says she doesn't, but she does, I can tell. Whenever she looks at me now, it's like she's watching a scary movie."
"Did the scratches hurt?"
She didn't answer my question right away. She said, "Be prepared. It's going to get worse. Mom and Dad are both going to get worse. But this is the only way now. We have to show them."
"Show them what?"
"The scratches hurt, yeah. But that's nothing. I'll have to do something worse, much worse, eventually. Go back to bed. They'll wake up soon." I tiptoed out of her bedroom, almost believing that if I was sneaky enough, if I was light enough on my feet, the hallway camera wouldn't see me, or whoever was watching the footage would think I was just coming out of the bathroom again. Of course, the next morning I got in big trouble. Someone, I've always wondered if it was Ken, but I never asked him, must have told Dad about my nighttime wanderings as soon as he got up, because he lit into me at breakfast in the middle of my bowl of chocolate Cheerios, full-on yelling at me for the first time in front of the cameras. It was a serious scolding. He stood so that he towered above the sitting me, his face all red and eyes jumping out of his head. He repeatedly asked if I thought this was some sort of game, if I thought they were all fooling around. I cried and apologized, told him I was worried and only checking to see if Marjorie was okay. Mom didn't say anything and went outside for a smoke while Marjorie's bagel was toasting. He asked why I thought they had made the new bedtime rules. He said that I wasn't dumb and that I was smart enough to figure it out, but in a way that made me feel dumb. Just in case it wasn't clear, I was forbidden to go to her room or to be with Marjorie if I was by myself until further notice. If I did it again, I wouldn't be able to watch my Bigfoot and River Monsters shows.
Chapter 20. Of course, the show used material from that night in Marjorie's room to fill the third and fourth episodes. They showed the actual interview with Dr. Navidson in the room from two different angles. They slowed down the film to focus on Marjorie's facial expressions and hand gestures, and at the 12:37 timestamp of the interview, when she first referred to herself as we, there's a frame, caught from both camera angles, where her irises appear to be red, as though someone had taken her photo with a flash. The show interviewed two photography experts who analyzed films and arrived at no conclusion as to the source of the red in her eyes. They also slowed down the interview film to point out some odd shadow play that occurred on the wall behind Marjorie, offset to her right, and for the viewers, their left. At three different times, there appeared to be long, tubular-shaped shadows, waving and writhing in the background. Again, the photography experts were consulted, and again, they came to no conclusion, although, without giving their evidence, they immediately dismissed Photoshop, editing tricks, and other ways of physically doctoring the film as a possible cause. Sound and voice experts examined Marjorie's audio. They dissected the parts where her voice changed and examined the speech patterns and frequency waves and made readings of her emotional state using layered voice analysis. One expert claimed that the other voices she spoke in had totally different voice biometrics, which reflect both the anatomy of the speaker, the size and shape of the mouth and throat, and the behavioral regional speech patterns style of the speaker, and could not have come from the same person. They fact-checked everything Marjorie had said, verifying the sources she quoted, and they briefly investigated and examined her claims about the Pope performing an exorcism in St. Peter's Square. They showed a clip of Pope Francis laying hands on a man in a wheelchair who convulsed and slumped as the Pope prayed. They showed the Vatican's written statement, a non-denial denial that he'd performed an exorcism in public. They quoted a book Pope Francis had written when he was an archbishop titled On Heaven and Earth, highlighting the second chapter titled On the Devil, and its ominous snippets relating to Satan and his terrible influence. They ran a brief third-party interview with a bishop of Madrid who had indeed petitioned the Vatican to train more of his priests as exorcists. They outlined a brief biography of the writer H.P. Lovecraft. They detailed an extensive bibliography and the recent renaissance of his ideas and influence on current popular and literary culture, noting the new volume of his work published by the Library of America. They explained his elder gods Cthulhu mythos and where the demon Yithora fit into it, and attempted to place Yithora within a wider context in the history of demon spirits within folklore and religion. Between the many segments of their dissection of Marjorie's interview, they ran reaction interviews from everyone involved. There were multiple clips of Mom and Dad giving their thoughts and opinions. Dad was always shot in bright light, usually on the back porch, his chest puffed, standing tall, resolute, like he was ready to do whatever it was he was supposed to do. It didn't really look like him, not the him that I remember. His eyes were solar flares, and he smiled too widely, all teeth, and he didn't sound like I remember him sounding. He didn't talk to the camera. He orated. He gave pep talks about how our family would overcome. He proselytized, working in Bible references and may God bless our family whenever he could. The interviews they ran with Mom were shot with her sitting in the kitchen, in dim lighting, almost sepia-toned, and with a cigarette trailing smoke in an ashtray more times than not. They painted her as the doubting Thomas of the family, which she was, but they also made her seem like she was on the verge of an emotional breakdown, which she was, but so was Dad. I'm convinced they employed more than a little creative editing to her interviews. On the show, she became the character who was inarticulately denying reality, the reality of our reality show. The off-screen interviewer would ask her to explain the shadows on the film or Marjorie's red eyes, something they didn't do with Dad, or if they did ask him to do so, they didn't run those interviews. Or some of the things Marjorie had said, and they'd cut to Mom shrugging, stammering, shrinking into her chair and mumbling, "I don't know," or "Not sure." Dr. Navidson was filmed speaking somewhere in the house, and even I can't tell exactly where he was when he was interviewed since he stood right up against a white wall. Kitchen? Living room? One of the hallways, stairwell landing, guest room. And his head took up the whole screen. He fumbled around and appeared very uncomfortable one-on-one with the camera. He declined to comment on specific details of this case, noting patient-client confidentiality, but admitted that he did recommend to the bishop that Marjorie's was an extraordinary case, one that was beyond science. They ran a get-to-know-me interview with Father Wanderley, with him sitting in a pew inside his church. He detailed his experience as a Jesuit, his undergraduate and graduate degrees from the College of the Holy Cross, spoke lovingly about his dog, Milo, a Cocker Spaniel mix that had lived with him at the rectory for 16 years. The off-screen interviewer asked him if he knew any jokes. Father Wanderley seemed genuinely embarrassed, said that he didn't know many, but did tell one.
"Did you hear how the devil is having a terrible time of it with our current economy? The wages of sin have gone up 10%.
In one of Father Wanderley's reaction interviews, conducted in the foyer, with him standing in front of the stairs, natural light pouring in from one of the windows behind him and to his right, he was much more forthcoming than Dr. Navidson had been in outlining the reasons why he was confident Marjorie was indeed possessed by an evil spirit. They even ran an interviewer with one of the protesters out in front of our house, which, shockingly, turned out to be a huge mistake. I'm guessing Barry, et al., knew that running the interview with a sign-carrying kook would encourage more protesters, and more protesters would mean more free media coverage. But as sniveling and weaselly and so obviously uncaring to our family's well-being as he was, I don't think that he would have purposefully dropped the busload of infamous Baptist hate group loonies on our doorstep, which is, of course, what happened. They ran a single reaction interview with me. It was very brief. Ken was off camera. He asked me questions while I sat on my bed. During taping, which happened after I'd returned home from an especially crappy day at school, we talked for close to an hour. Most of it was about the previous night in Marjorie's room. Some of it was about what it was like living with the cameras and what it was like just being me in general. They aired only 3 questions and answers, a snippet used at the closing segment of the 4th episode. Ken.
Do you love your sister?
Me.
Oh, yes, very much. She's my best friend. I want to be just like her, and I'd do anything for her.
Ken.
When Father Wanderley and Dr. Navidson were asking her questions last night, were you scared?
Me. After a long pause, during which I changed sitting positions on my bed, from legs unfolded to legs crossed, or crisscross applesauce.
Yeah, a little. But I wasn't scared of Marjorie. I was scared of what Father Wanderley says is happening to her.
Ken.
What was the scariest part?
Me.
Well, seeing the scratches all over her. I didn't think she'd do that to herself.
They filled 2 episodes with material from and relating to that night because they could, but also because they had to. 2 days after the night in Marjorie's room, Father Wanderley informed us that the bishop heading the northern pastoral region of the Archdiocese of Boston, which was composed of 64 parishes in southern Essex County, had given his permission and blessing to perform an exorcism on Marjorie. Father Wanderley, after briefly consulting with Barry, also told us that he would need 8 days to be fully prepared. No one questioned this. For those 8 days, the world outside our house grew increasingly chaotic. School became intolerable. Kids picked on me more often and more openly. Given the recent bullying laws passed in Massachusetts, which placed considerable legal culpability upon the school if bullying incidents went unreported, faculty and administration were in a tizzy, and Mom was called in routinely for meetings. The adults didn't seem to know what to do, but Mom wasn't about to keep me home from school. All I knew was that the kid who called me Sister Satan and pinched my arms hard enough to leave bruises 3 days in a row was suddenly not at school for the next 2, and when he returned, he wasn't allowed to go near me. Marjorie had already stopped going to school altogether, but a group of her former classmates set up an Instagram account under her name and posted screen caps from the show, both of her and of the actor playing her. Years later, I found out that the screen caps had violent or brutally sexualized captions. There was one picture of actor Marjorie masturbating in the hallway with the caption, "Twerk for Satan. Fuck me in the ass, Jesus." The page's creator and five other students were suspended for a week. Despite the cold of mid-November, the number of protesters in front of our house swelled so that the road was almost impassable to traffic. Two policemen were assigned detail to keep the protesters from encroaching on the property and from making contact with us or the crew. The police had to replace yellow tape daily and often had to clear people away from the mouth of our driveway whenever a car left or entered. Mom took a leave of absence from the bank. She didn't tell me, but I overheard her telling Dad that it was the bank's idea. She went grocery shopping in towns that were 30 minutes or more away. She spent her evenings on the phone with her parents, my only living grandparents, who lived in California. They didn't understand what it was we were doing on the show. Mom told me that after everything was done, maybe we'd go for a visit. I said, "Yay, for how long?" She said, "I don't know. Maybe for a really long time." Dad spent most of his mornings at Father Wanderley's parish, attending the two morning masses, and apparently even served as a Eucharistic minister. He told me it was the best way to start the day. I remember him telling me that going there fills me with hope, and all the prayers and support from my fellow parishioners are sustaining, like sunshine for a beautiful sunflower. I wanted to tell him that this, all of this, wasn't about him, but I chickened out. He spent most of his afternoons arguing with and attempting to intimidate protesters. He grew scarier by the day. So while our place or status within the community continued to deteriorate, the goings-on inside our house turned relatively calm. Now that we had a hard date upon which an exorcism would be attempted, Marjorie's bizarre behavior went into a kind of remission. She wouldn't talk much, and she still wore her earphones most of the time, and I'd catch her talking to herself and giggling at nothing. But she willingly left her room and came downstairs to eat dinner with us in the kitchen. For 7 days, there wasn't anything that happened inside the house that was dramatic or show-worthy. I know this because Barry spent most of that week stomping around, going room to room as though he expected that he himself would find demons defecating in dark corners, or the walls bleeding, or something equally entertaining. No such luck. He snapped at crew members, especially at Ken, once telling him, "You have to figure out something. We need something to shoot." The something to shoot turned out to be a post-dinner family scene. It was the night before the exorcism was to be performed, and we were all in the living room watching TV. Dad had put on a show where a survivalist is dumped in the middle of the wilderness and eats tree sap, bugs, and rodents for 10 days. In this episode, the guy was somewhere deep in the boreal forest. I was watching, but not really watching. I did cartwheels across the room and front rolls into the couch, asking Dad to rate them by giving me a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Mom only half-heartedly asked me to stop, so I didn't. She wasn't paying much attention anyway and had her nose buried in her smartphone. Marjorie came downstairs and said, "Hi, is it okay if I watch TV too?" We all stuttered and stumbled over one another, saying, "Yes," and "Sure," and "Come on in." Marjorie plopped herself down on the floor in front of the TV, lying on her stomach, head propped up in her hands. We all watched her watching TV. There was an odd feeling in the room. We were nervous that something would happen, but at the same time, we were glad she was there. Barry and Ken suddenly appeared in the front foyer. Two cameras, one at each end of the room, were focused on us. Barry announced that he wanted to tape a scene of us together, trying to maintain our normal family life. He actually said, normal family life to us. He whisper consulted with Ken, read some of Ken's notes, and then gave us some direction. He said,
"Okay, why don't we start with you guys talking a little about what you're watching?"
We all looked around, at a loss as what to say. Mom said, "This is silly." Dad flashed angry and was quick to chide her.
"Come on, we can do this. Is acting like a family so hard to do?"
Mom was more than ready to respond in kind. "Right. Kids, gather round Daddy so we can all hold hands and sing Kumbaya." I quickly back-rolled off the arm of the couch, slapping my feet hard as I landed. I shouted, "Dad! Dad! Rating! You said you'd rate my landings!" I hoped I'd been loud enough to drown out the start of another fight. Dad gave me a thumbs up and said, "Woo," but his enthusiasm for my performance was lacking. Before they could start back in on each other, I pointed at the TV and said,
"Maybe they'll finally find Bigfoot this time."
Marjorie said, "This isn't the Bigfoot show, Monkey." We were pleased and shocked that Marjorie was casually interacting with us. Barry made that camera-rolling motion with his hands, desperately wanting one of us to respond, to goose the conversation forward. Dad said,
"Right, it's, called Survivor Man."
I said,
"Yeah, I know, but he's way deep in the woods all by himself. That's where Bigfoot lives, so maybe he'll see one."
"I don't think so, sweetie."
Dad was badly overacting. He had that fake smile on his face, the one that looked painful to wear. I said,
"I bet he heard one but didn't know it was a Bigfoot making that noise because he's not an expert."
I punctuated with a one-handed cartwheel. Dad said,
"Of course he's an expert."
"No, he's not a Bigfoot expert."
I looked to Barry and then Ken, looking for some sign of approval, that we were doing and talking about the right things in the right ways. There was a lull, and Barry said,
"What do you think, Sarah? Is this guy a Bigfoot expert?"
Mom said, "What?" "Oh, sorry," then put her phone down on the end table and crossed her arms. "He's not a Bigfoot expert. He's just, what, Survivor Man?" I said,
"Sounds like a superhero name. He needs a cape."
Mom gave me a sad smile, like she'd just remembered that I was there and had been there for a long time. She said,
"No capes,"
like the character from one of my favorite movies, The Incredibles. At the same time, Marjorie said,
"A cape he made out of moss and twigs," but she mumbled.
It wasn't a weird, creepy, she's possessed mumble, but her previously normal, "I'm barely interested in what you're talking about" mumble. I heard her and understood her. Mom did too, because she laughed. Marjorie added,
"And tight superhero underwear made from squirrel pelts."
Mom said,
"It's where he puts his nuts."
I screamed, "Mom!" And everyone but Dad laughed. The room went quiet again. Barry and Ken whispered to each other some more and consulted the notes again. I leaned on the arm of the couch like it was a pommel horse and went up and down on my tiptoes. We watched Survivor Man build a shelter and set deadfall traps for small animals. I said,
"Ew, is he really gonna squish animal heads with those rocks? I don't want to see that. Change it."
Marjorie turned, closed one eye, and peered at me through her pinching fingers.
"I can squish your head."
She pinched her thumb and pointer together and said,
"Squish, squish, squish."
I screamed a fake death moan and fell backward onto the couch, kicking my feet until I rolled over and landed face up in Dad's lap. He said,
"Come on,"
and pushed me off his lap onto the couch.
"You just hit me in the..."
He looked at the cameras and didn't finish his sentence. Marjorie said,
"You hit him in the squirrel pelt."
She giggled, and so did I, and so did Mom. Ken suggested that we put on one of our DVDs, something that we'd all like to watch, something funny that we could all talk about. I shouted,
"Incredibles!"
But Marjorie said no. Mom went over to the media cabinet and picked through the small library of films. She suggested other titles, and with each title, one of us would say no. There was no consensus.
Forget it, then. John, just find something we all can watch.
I said, SpongeBob.
No.
Dad changed the channel to hockey, and everyone groaned, so we flipped it back to Survivor Man. Marjorie started to get up. Dad asked,
Where are you going?